Welcome to another episode of Pat and the Fat Man. We like to talk about movies, sports, and whatever else we feel like. I'm Pat.
And I'm the Fat Man.
Coming at you, talking about Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Fingers crossed, folks. It's the last time. I can't guarantee it, but we're going to try.
We'll see. You never know.
Yeah, I think that's going to be in my hands more than yours, unfortunately.
Yeah, probably. We'll see. Who wants to rant about what? Will we talk about Toontown, the judge's plans, sweet, sweet iced tea?
Sadly, no iced tea in this part of the movie.
No, all the iced tea has either been spent or shot up.
Yep.
Just dip from here on out.
Yep.
Just dip.
Yeah, that's true, dip. Just hear random.
It hits the old spittoon.
Why do you have a spittoon in your house? Well, because, you know, I want my deposit.
I didn't even know where to go with that. Like, right? I had nothing for that. I had nothing. There was nowhere to go. There's nothing to do with that.
Ah, I stumped you. We're off to a good start.
All right, folks. There's a chance. But then again, if I stall out hard, we may not make it at all.
So I believe we left off with Roger getting hit with a ton of bricks.
So Roger coming to save the day, frolicking about with his pistol inexplicably. Got the judges and the weasels on the ropes. And then, of course, Mr. Romantic Weasel up in the bricks drops a ton of bricks on him because it's got to be a ton.
Well, because he said a ton of bricks. Yeah. So therefore, but we talked about the stars, right? And how it finally got stars.
Look, stars.
Ready when you are, Raul.
Cut, cut, cut. Hit by a literal proverbial ton of bricks.
Roger and Jessica get tied up and hooked on a crane hook in front of a brick wall. I believe the brick wall says stand clear, doesn't it?
Stay clear. Because on the other side of that brick wall is Toontown. So they don't want to accidentally break the brick wall and let Toontown out again, which more questions than answers at the end of that line, because we still don't know. How is Toontown contained? Or is it contained? Like, how does that? Is there a wall all the way around it? I don't know. Questions that need answers that will never come because this is a 30-year-old movie.
Like, if they were going to do a remake, they would have done it by now, and I don't think they are.
I wouldn't say that because we're getting our third Tron movie.
Well, yeah, third Tron movie. Well, it's funny about that, too, is this, and we're going to go off the rails here. Already, I'm feeling. It doesn't seem like there's like a real connection with the last movie. Like, I don't see any of the previous actors. No Bruce Boxleitner or whoever played Flynn's son.
What's his name's in it? The guy who played Jeff Bridges. Yeah. He's the only one you need.
Well, but see, I don't know if it's actually him or like maybe some message from him or something like that. You know?
Yeah. Because he supposedly dies at the end of Legacy. That's the real question mark. Like, did he survive? What of him is in there?
Right.
You know, what happened to Flynn's son and the isomole or isomet, whatever she was, that got out with him.
Isomorphic.
And finally experienced the joy that is the sun.
Right.
Which, you know, is a joy you never realize you miss until you've been in a dark place for a long time.
Yeah. And Olivia Munn in like tight fitting spandex and neon lights.
It's not spandex. I don't know what it is. It's not spandex, though.
I don't care.
It's like hard leather.
All I care is that it's tight fitting, Pat. You focused on the wrong word.
Damn it. Okay, well, all right. Fine.
What is this? Top model? Nobody cares what it's made out of.
America's next top model. Nobody cares.
Nobody cares.
I got Dotson. I got Dotson over here. See? Nobody cares. Nobody cares. It's got like a whole cabana full of food on that one table. Let us know if you get that reference, folks.
Oh my God. Back to our movie. So they string up Roger and Jessica. They turn on their Deathmobile with its, you know, fire engine cannon in the front.
It's the most ridiculous creation of all, this Deathmobile.
pretty creative from an engineering standpoint, but if it wasn't for this exact purpose, it wouldn't be very practical.
Right. It's one of those things like a kid would draw.
Yeah.
Like if you told him, hey, I need a giant machine that deals out liquid death to cartoons, like this is what he would draw. Right. And so that points to, again, trying to give it away on what Judge Doom actually is, but not being able to finally get the distance there because, you know, he plays like a crazy straight man so well. Like just this crazy, but like by the book letter of the law guy, and he's actually a crazy toon.
Well, that just describes I think Christopher Lloyd in general.
Yeah, in general. You know, it's funny, I saw him at Dragon Con.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was in the Back to the Future panel because it was like the 25th anniversary, 30th anniversary. Yeah. So he's in that panel. It was him, it was the principal.
Strickland,
not Skinner. Skinner's the Simpsons. And yes. I think Marty's sister, the girl who played Marty's sister.
Okay.
And the guy who played Strickland, he looked very old. Very old. Barely here. People would ask questions on the microphone, and then the gal would have to yell them into his ear.
Aww.
Like so loud that you could hear what she said, like on her mic that was on the table.
Aww.
So he's pretty old, but Christopher Lloyd looked exactly the same age that he's always looked. 30 years later.
Makes you wonder where he's going in his spare time. My guess is somewhere either in very far eastern Europe or very south America.
Yeah. That's probably the same place Keith Richards goes in his spare time.
Or Aaron Rodgers. Aaron. So, yeah, they turn on their death machine, and Judge Doom tells Valiant it's over and starts to walk away, and he ends up slipping on a floor full of fake eyeballs.
Like you do.
Well, you know, in a gag factory like this. So the weasels start laughing like crazy. Valiant sees this as an opportunity to try to get a jump on one of them. Judge Doom sees him, stops him. It's at that moment Judge Doom gets up, covering one eye, going, "You idiots, one of these days you're going to laugh yourself to death just like your hyena cousins."
Yeah.
I don't know what his name is. The main weasel says, "You know, what should we do with Valiant?" Doom says, "Let him watch his friends die and then shoot him." And decides he's not going to watch, like for whatever reason. Again, villains not wanting to make sure that things are done properly.
Well, I will say that they gave him an out on this one in that he wants to go fix his eye, right? Because theoretically, his fake eye popped out when he fell down in and amongst the eyeballs, and he lost it. So he's got to go put that back in. Because as we see later, he's wearing fake eyeballs.
Right.
So that's my assumption on what goes on there. So that this actually is like an actual, you know, fairly decent out for the villain walking away while his henchmen totally mess up the last part of his plan.
While they're standing there, Valiant gets the idea that he's going to try to get the weasels to laugh. And so he hits the button on this huge contraption. It's like one of those floats at Disney or something. He hits a button, like all of a sudden the music and lights and everything start playing.
Yeah. Well,
yeah. It's the merry-go-round breaks down.
Yeah.
Literally that song from before.
Yep.
Valiant starts singing and dancing, you know, talking about watching how Roger makes people laugh, this, that, and the other thing. And then all of a sudden Valiant's, you know, running around, dancing, getting all these little gimmicks where he's falling down, this, that, and the other thing, doing backflips. So clearly that was a stunt double.
Well, you never know. I'm just going to leave it there. I'm not going to take that. You never know. I don't know if Bob did his own stunts, but I kind of guess he probably didn't.
Especially for a guy who didn't really want to do this movie to begin with.
Yeah. This is Valiant kind of thinking on his feet, right? Because he's about to watch his friends die, and he knows if he approaches this from, he knows he's been able to trick the weasels before if he approaches things kind of like a tune. And he knows if I get these things to laugh, then, you know, it's been referenced several times now that they laugh themselves to death, like they're hyena cousins. I don't know exactly how that works, but that laughter will kill them. And so he's like, okay, I got to make them laugh.
I got to tell you, when I was younger and full of life and cheer and thought the world was good, a good place, I've definitely hurt myself laughing before.
Oh, yeah. It hasn't been that long for me.
Well, aren't you just special?
No, I'm a laughing fool. That's which I guess does make me special in this ultra cynical age of watching news all the time and being constantly informed. I think that's the real problem. I don't think things are actually worse than they ever have been. I think it's just everybody knowing how bad stuff sometimes is in other places of the world.
Oh, just that you see it more often, that it becomes less rare.
Yeah, in seemingly. But I don't actually know if it was or ever was. I mean, heck, I think half of the news is made by AI at this point anyway. So, I mean, who knows what's happening? Well, I mean, we're about 5 years away from
moving on beyond the conspiracy
theory. Literally not knowing who the president
is. We have a whole podcast on conspiracy theories.
Right? Yeah, but this isn't a conspiracy theory. This is what's going to happen.
Isn't that what all conspiracy theorists say?
No, they say this is what did happen. Mine's different. Mine's about the future.
Oh no. Put away the tinfoil hat for tonight. We
just like Eddie deciding he's gotta act in the most like funny, hilarious, goofy, literally goofy-ish way he possibly can to get these weasels to laugh. Because as we all know, slapstick is the highest form of comedy.
True that. One of the greatest movies to date, still Airplane.
If you watch a show and it has a mix of like witty humor and slapstick humor and all the, you know, all the various kinds of humors like jokes and whatnot, and you watch it again and again, you watch it like by the fourth time you watch it, none of the other things will make you laugh, but the slapstick will make you laugh every time. Like there's a repeating commercial on right now during the football games. It's a window commercial and they're looking at all these windows on this new house and this lady's like jogging along and she runs into a signpost and then falls into a trash can. And it's just the funniest thing. I'm laughing just thinking about it.
That's got to be a local one because I don't think I've seen that commercial.
Anderson Windows, and it must have played 8 times during the A&M game, and I saw like I
guess we're going to go off the rails here, but anyways, it's been a while, so you know what? We're going to talk, okay, folks? It's been a while. Yeah, that's the thing with commercials now. There's like two of them.
Yeah.
Like, all of a sudden, advertising dried up or just went straight to social media because it's not on TV. That's for sure.
When you watch a streaming service and they play ads, they have a tendency to play the same 5 ads for the entirety of whatever show you're watching. So I must have watched the same 5 ads for 3 hours. You know, every time they cut to commercial, and it was the SEC network, it was those same 5 ads. So I saw that Windows by Anderson commercial. You know, I can tell you it's Windows by Anderson because I saw it so many flipping times. I can tell you I must have seen that 8 or 9 times. And every time the woman, you know, goes head first into that trash can, it still made me laugh. Even when I was angry at the beginning of the game, I was like, we're going to lose. We're never going to amount to anything.
Was it Sunday or Saturday?
Saturday.
Yeah.
I mean, heck, the Cowboys beat the Jets pretty handily, too. Wasn't like the shootout between the Jaguars and the Chiefs. That was nuts. But anyways, sports ball mixing in with our
Roger Rabbit.
This will make us talking about like current sporting events. That definitely makes for a timeless podcast, that's for sure. But anyways, slapstick will almost always make you laugh, even over and over and over again.
So as this whole song and dance bit carries on, Valiant erupts from this pile of boxes on a pogo stick and is, you know, springing like 10 feet in the air.
Yeah.
I had a pogo stick when I was a kid. I never went that damn high.
No, you don't go that high on a pogo stick. You're like a foot, maybe.
Right. He's jumping so high that, in fact, his head hits a light fixture and he's electrocuted. He gets stuck in midair because, you know, he's being electrocuted.
Yeah.
And that's enough to get the first weasel to laugh himself to death.
Yeah, electrocuted like a tube.
The fat one with the beanie. So he dies and you see his angel wings, I can't believe he's an angel, would, you know, go up. And then the second one, who was sitting on the side of the death machine, he's going to heaven and he's trying to pull his ghost, his angel, back into his body.
Yeah. Is that the insane one? No, that's the I can't remember which one that is, but yeah.
It's not one of the suited ones. It's one of the other ones.
But it's not the insane guy because he's like towards the end.
Right, right, right. And he's on the cannon.
Yeah.
And then at this moment, two of them are dead. And then Valiant standing, going on more about Song of Bits. And he says something in the lyrics about, you know, drive him up the wall.
Yeah.
And then he gets hit in the head with a vase and falls over. And Roger goes, nose. And so the main weasel's like, nose doesn't rhyme with wall. Valiant jumps up, goes, no, but this does. And kicks him right between the legs.
He goes flying all the way up and then down
into the dip.
To the dip. Splash.
Splash.
Unlike the slow melting that we got earlier, this is a once and done, splash gone. We don't see him evaporate into nothingness.
Right. It was pretty quick for him. Mm-hmm. And this causes the driver of the death machine to laugh himself to death, the green suited one. Yep. He goes floating up to the sky.
As he dies, he hits the go button, basically.
The brake release.
Yeah. His body falls onto the, or his foot basically is, falls onto the accelerator. So it starts to move forward. And then his angel goes up. I don't remember. Is the cannon already going at this time?
No, not yet. So then that guy starts drifting off. And then at that moment, that's when the crazy guy is like laughing. And
you're explodes. Killing him, Eddie. You're slaying him.
Right. And then the crazy one's like, you know, hopping up and down, laughing and kind of dancing. And his arm hits the cannon turn on, you know, switch.
That's right.
That's when the cannon starts going on. And it just misses Jessica and Roger. And then he turns the cannon to the left away from them. He laughs so hard he falls off of the platform the cannon is on and falls right into the bristles of the death machine. And that's how he ends up as a ghost going up to heaven. Only this is the interesting part too. As he's floating by the cannon, he pulls a lever to bring the cannon to turn back on Jessica and Roger. It says, time to kill the rabbit.
Time to kill the rabbit. All right, so let's talk about Toon Afterlife. You thought we didn't have anything to go on to an existential crisis about, but now we do. All right, so these toons die, right? And before, we hadn't really broached this subject, but the movie kind of puts it, you know, front and center. We have these, you know, fairly, from what we can tell, evil weasels who have been going around town with this Judge Doom, mercilessly offing other toons in this dip substance. And yet they produce angel characters out of their dead toon body. So first and foremost, we have several toons dying, not by dip.
You could shed some light on this. Maybe it's like, you know, Jewish people think about death. You know, the body has to be intact in order to pass on.
That's some sects of Judaism think about that. So like, okay, how does that apply to this? I'm confused.
In the case of the one weasel that's in the dip, his body is disintegrated.
Yes.
So there is no body.
He doesn't produce an angel is what you're saying.
Right. Yeah, and he's the only one in this sequence that doesn't produce an angel.
Right. None of the others die via the dip, right? Which is the only way we know, told to us by the judge, right? Or by Eddie's former co-workers in the police force. I can't remember who says it, but they when they talk about the dip, they say it's the only way to kill a toon.
What he specifically says is, remember how we thought that there was no way to kill a toon?
Yeah.
Well, the judge found it.
Okay. Ostensibly speaking, I would argue that these weasels don't actually die, right? Mm-hmm. They just turn into different kinds of toons. Mm-hmm. And would then go on to inhabit Toontown as these ghostly versions of themselves, or angelic versions.
And they could potentially, you know, like repossess themselves.
Yeah, theoretically, I guess, if that made sense.
In most movies involving cartoon characters that die, that's like what they end up doing as ghosts, is repossessing somebody.
That's true. And that probably makes logical sense within the context of Toontown, which does not run on logic. Not actual rational logic. So it's just interesting to think about, like, you know, the one weasel dies, like, for real, or is annihilated, theoretically, on the question mark being, do toons have souls? You know, who knows on that one? But I think the other weasels don't die so much as they just become different kinds of toons that are not useful to the judge, which potentially means there's a bunch of angelic hyenas out there roaming around. Because very obviously, the insane weasel who says time to kill the rabbit is not acting very much like an angelic creature.
Right, I was going to say, you know, cartoon heaven must have some pretty broad terms.
Yeah, pretty much anybody gets in.
Right.
It's not so much the divided afterlife of Christianity or Islam where you go to heaven or hell. It's the old school afterlife of like the Greeks or the early Hebrews or where you just go to Hades. Everybody goes there. No matter what you did in life, that's where you go. Yeah, there's an afterlife. It's there. It sure is there.
So after the last weasel dies, Valiant, instead of just turning the whole thing off, decides he, in his, you know, very manly physique, is going to climb up onto the platform that takes him to the water cannon and try to shut it off from there. At which point, Judge Doom decides he's going to go for a ride on some sort of lifting machine and sees that Valiant is trying to foil his plans and decides to use his cane to help him zip line over to him and kick him off the platform.
It's all happening in the background. You can see the judge going up the box lifter and, you know, you're like, what is he doing? And then he comes out of nowhere with this zip line via the cane and kicking Eddie Valiant out of the way. It's like, yeah, the judge is getting more toony and toony every minute.
Now we come to the final boss fight. And the judge pulls a sword from his cane and Valiant backs up, is looking for some weapon of his own and sees a box that says literally Acme Singing Sword. Yeah. And he pulls out this cartoon sword that's got the face of Frank Sinatra singing
it's witchcraft.
Wicked witchcraft.
Witchcraft.
And although I know it's strictly taboo. So Bryant looks at it like, well, this is useless, throws it away, finds another crate, and it says Acme Super Strong Magnets, and pulls out a giant red and white magnet. The magnet decides it's going to throw out some cartoon lightning that have hands at the end of it and starts, you know, struggling with this, trying to pull the sword out of the judge's hand. It's a back and forth, till finally the judge locks up the hands, starts pushing it back towards Eddie, and flips the magnet back on Eddie, who ends up getting pinned between the magnet and a oil barrel.
Well, at first, he like just uses the magnetic pull to pull himself towards Eddie with the sword out. And he's like, oh, wait, that's not working. I got to get the sword.
And so the judge believes that that he's won, sheaves his sword because Eddie's kind of just stuck where he's at.
Stuck in the barrel, can't move, death machine, slowly moving, you know, spray of dip headed towards the couple who's hung up via the crane. Very damsel in distress situation going on here.
And so then Judge decides he's going to come around the corner with a giant steamroller. Pavement. Yeah, steamroller. Pavement flattener.
Yeah.
Whatever that technical term is. So Eddie, seeing his doom coming at him, decides again he's going to go see if he can find something that'll save his life. And there's a whole box of plot holes. I mean, it literally says like holes on it. I'm pretty sure it says plot holes on it.
I think it does.
And literally he opens the box and pulls out like a black circle film thing that he just, you know, throws onto the magnet and it creates a hole for him. So he gets out that way.
Yep. And didn't he use those before? Or no, they showcased them before.
Right. During the Acme murder scene.
Yeah.
Because the one cop throws it against the wall and puts his hand in it.
Yeah. It's a portable hole. But who knows where it goes? It just, because it doesn't come out like, it's not like a portal where it comes out another side somewhere. It just go on into the blackness.
Valiant climbs on top of the steamroller, walks along the you know, the hood of it and kicks the judge off of it and then tries to fist fight him.
Yeah.
In which he misses horribly.
Yeah. Just and really as they're
doing their thing, the steamroller runs over. So if you remember, there was a thing that sits on top of a desk that's got a surface to write on, and then it's got like a cubby hole in it, like a writer's case or something.
It's sloped so you can stand and write on it or sit and write on it. And
underneath is a place to hold everything.
Yeah.
So anyways, that falls over and gets crushed. But you could see when it does get crushed, there's that cartoon hammer that was also from the Acme crime scene laying there. clearly foreshadowing its usage in a coming scene.
Yes.
Back to the judge and Eddie. They're struggling, fighting, and Eddie decides he's going to try to use this carton, this round carton that we don't know what's in it yet, to fight him with it. Well, that doesn't work, and the judge ends up knocking him to the floor. And he protects himself with this canister, and you come to find out the canister is super glue.
Yeah, because the judge goes down to punch him basically in the face, and then he pulls up this thing, and the judge punches right through it into the glue. Now he's got his hand covered in super glue.
And so the super glue hand decides to take a punch at him, misses Eddie, hits right onto the front wheel of the steamroller, and Eddie gets away, and the judge is backing up, backs into the puddle of super glue. He ends up getting his hand off of the wheel, but tries to pry it off with his foot that's got super glue on it. So now his foot is glued to the steamroller.
Stereotypical, glued myself to something, can't get myself off. And every time I get myself off of the glued thing, it's by getting myself re-glued in a different place. Right. Normal conundrum. Every man's been through this.
What?
What, you've never... I'm not saying with a steamroller. I'm saying, you know, with glue.
What's she talking
about? You need to get out more. You need to do more stuff. Get in the garage. Go fritter away an afternoon in a garage sometime. You'll glue yourself to some stuff. Don't worry. It'll happen.
So while all this is happening, the dip gun is slowly moving back towards Roger and Jessica, and Eddie takes this moment to turn off the death machine. And so they're saved again for like the second time in this scene.
Yeah. Because it's constantly cutting back and forth to them, right? To build the dramatic tension.
Right.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Because now it cuts back to the judge, who is slowly getting rolled over by the steamroller.
Yes.
Which, for a Disney movie, is pretty graphic. But, I mean, it's not that graphic, because this is where you, if you weren't 5 years old, you'd be like, hey, where's all the blood?
Yeah. Instead, as a five-year-old, what you're doing is watching a man scream.
And get crushed to death.
While being crushed to death by a steamroller.
And then the nightmare of this, because after the thing rolls over him, Roger goes, look, and you see the judge pop up, but flat.
Yeah, flat. And sort of rolling around in his flatness. And just until he can find a helium bottle.
Well, Eddie says, holy smokes, he's a toon.
Yeah.
You know, the judge goes surprised, and he goes, not really. Only a toon could come up with that harebrained freeway, you know, scheme.
Yep.
And that's when the judge says, not just any toon. And then, yes, he finds a balloon inflator air tank.
Not just any toon. His voice is higher now. And, you know, that's the voice he's using to scream, because he goes to a higher level voice while he's being crushed by the... By the way, I just want to point out that this movie melts a puppy in the form of a shoe and slowly runs over a high-pitched screaming man with a steamroller. PG, folks. PG.
Yep. Never mind the night gin saloon, you know, with the questionable axe.
Oh, yeah. In all seriousness, folks, if you've ever encountered industrial accidents, there have been people who have been melted, and there have been people who have been slowly run over by rolling things, and they are nightmarish.
Oh, yeah.
They are the fuel of nightmares. Like, they scar people who witness that for life, and this movie has both of them.
So the judge decides he's going to reinflate himself by sticking his mouth on the air tank release valve and, you know, pumping air to himself.
Like you do.
And as he's inflating himself, it looks at his feet that are inflating, and then you hear pop, pop, and two glass eyeballs fall to the ground.
Yep. So like I said before, he's got fake eyeballs.
When he turns around, you see his eyes are just cartoonish red. And you know what's funny is right at this moment, if you freeze this, he looks very much like Hank Azaria in Brockmire. Like, he looks a lot like him in that.
Yeah. Just how his hair is.
And the face structure. And
yeah,
all that.
Yeah.
And so when he turns around to look at it, he goes, remember me, Eddie? When I killed your brother, I talked. And as he's talking, his voice is getting higher and higher. He goes, I talk just like this.
Just like this. Just goes way off the scale high.
And his eyes turn into daggers because he's staring daggers at Eddie Valiant.
Yep.
Get it? Get it, folks? Yep. Go ahead and pause it. You know, let that sink in. Go ahead and laugh. We all did. Eddie decides he's going to run, and all of a sudden the judge has, like, you know, springs coming out of his shoes, and he's, you know, flying through the air on these springs to land right on, you know, Eddie to turn him around and punch him in the mouth.
Because somehow showing that he is a toon allows him to become an Inspector Gadget.
Well, now he doesn't have to pull his punches.
Right. Quite literally. Quite
literally. And so the judge turns on the Doom machine again. And it's at this point the judge takes off a glove and what appears to her, a golden anvil that he just punches Eddie and he goes flying across the room.
Yeah, it's very literally Hammer space.
Right.
When the judge reaches his hand into an off-screen thing, he can bring it back as whatever he wants.
Right. And so when he does, he turns around and this time the same hand is turned into an arm with a buzzsaw at the end of it.
Yes.
And it's this Doom moment that he starts threatening Eddie with.
Yeah. Unlike the T-1000, he can make complex machines with his molten metal body.
And so it's very dramatic, you know, to show that he can cut through chains and this, that, and the other thing. And so the judge lunges at Eddie with this buzzsaw. Eddie dives out of the way and grabs the aforementioned cartoon hammer and tries to get the judge with it. It misses him, tries to get him again. And this time, instead of hitting the judge, it hits the release valve on the Doom machine, releasing all the dip.
Yeah. It's a quick release at the bottom of every tank that allows the contents of the tank to come out in a streaming fashion, killing any and everybody in the area.
And so it hits the judge square on. He goes flying, covered in dip. As this is happening, the dip cannon has almost reached Roger and Jessica. In fact, Jessica saying goodbye to Roger. And then all of a sudden, see that the water pressure, the dip pressure starts dropping and goes away. And
yep.
Cannon's no more any good. At this point, Jessica's like, oh, you know, like the damsel in distress, I'm going to pass out. And then horror movement number three, which is two in this scene, but probably three in the whole movie, is the judge is standing in a whole pool of dip and he starts melting and screaming as he's being melted.
Yes.
You know, like Wicked Witch of the West, you know. Oh.
Unlike the Wicked Witch of the West, who has a more dignified melting scene, which is mostly covered up by smoke. This is a little more terrifying.
Yeah. Now, as that's happening, the Doom machine's still rolling forward, and there's still a little drizzle out of the cannon, so our hostages aren't quite safe. So Eddie has to grab the crane controls and get him out of the way as the Doom machine plows through the brick wall and straight into Toontown, where it promptly rolls onto train tracks and gets slammed by a passenger train.
The train tracks probably only appeared there 5 to 10 minutes ago.
Right, you know.
In preparation to destroy this giant machine that they didn't know was coming, but it's Toontown.
Right, because as soon as that train going from right to left disappears with the Doom machine, one of those, I don't know what you call them, the seesaw little train track things, you know,
yeah,
you
yeah.
know what I'm talking about, goes from left to right across the scene.
Logic. Right.
Now that everyone's kind of had a moment to catch their breath, you know, Roger's like, Eddie, the floor's covered in dip. How are we going to get down? So he gets the brilliant idea to turn on the water for the fire hydrants, you know, the fire main. And it just blasts all the caps off the fire hydrants to push the dip into the drains by water.
I will say that literally no industrial environment in the world has this setup. They have sprinkler systems that come from the air.
Well, think about this, because some of these are right in the middle of the warehouse, so in order to get to it you'd have to, you know, walk into the fire or to the warehouse, which if it's on fire you're not going in.
Yeah, the only places you have hydrants are places that you would connect a fire hose to, and that's not going to be inside the warehouse. There are a lot of warehouses and industrial environments do have fire hose connections, but they just look like water pipes. they're not hydrants. Hydrants are specifically for fire engines, and they're always outside, and they're designed that way to let everybody know, don't park in front of this.
Yeah, the floor gets cleared to dip, and Eddie lowers Roger and Jessica to the floor. And he unties Roger, and then he goes back for Jessica and helps her down. And she says, "My hero," and pushes past Valiant to go straight to Roger.
Yeah.
Of course, Eddie's there like, okay, what am I, just chopped liver? Yeah. Whatever.
And she's like raining down praises on him about how awesome, you know, how whatever he was, Valiant or brave.
We did miss one part, like when they first got strung up, Jessica did point out that she goes, "Oh, you were brilliant, Roger," you know, and he's like, "Oh, really?" She goes, "Better than Goofy."
That has some weird implications, but we're not going to go into those. I don't want to think about that, so we're moving on.
It's at this moment the doors bust in. Benny the taxi comes rolling in along with a couple of cop cars. Benny rolls up right next to where Judge Doom's remains are. Like, holy geez, what do we got? What in Sam Hill happened here?
Such a good character, Benny.
Yes, it's he really is.
So solid all the way through the movie. Like, yeah, it's funny because I really like Valiant, and I, you know, Roger's okay, and you know, there's obviously some appeal of Jessica, but like, I love that cab. Like, I just do.
The other detective gets out, and Dolores get out, and they're looking down at the remains, and she's like, "What was this, a rubber mask?" And Valiant is like, "Yeah, and this was the rope from the Acme murder. Think you, if you match, you can match the paint from the rope to, you know, to him." The other detective's like, "Oh, Judge Doom killed Marvin Acme." And Valiant has to tell him, "Yeah, and RK marooned, and my brother."
And in the 1950s, it's really all you needed to convict a guy and close the case.
No one worried about evidence.
I mean, at this point, like, this has got to be one of the weirdest things ever. Weirdest sets of tragedies.
Never mind. Like, so you saying that you murdered a judge?
Yeah. So you melted this guy? You're sick. What was the dip? What dip? I don't see any dip around here.
Well, I guess you washed it all away, so we can't pin it on you.
Do I look like I could melt somebody? I mean, you got that.
Really good feeling, I see. And you talking tough to me? I don't know. How about you exhale first?
Yeah.
So it's at this moment that 30 Toons come rolling out of Toontown and come right up to the remains of Judge Doom. Like, oh no! So this guy was a real Toon. Boy, I wonder who he really was. They like one by one start going on. I'll tell you what, he ain't no rabbit, or a duck, or a dog, or a wooden boy, or a sheep.
Cause Toons. Right. Let's make a series of jokes about this melted man.
And how he wasn't us.
Yes.
And so it was at this moment that Dolores notices that there's an ink stain on Eddie's shirt. And Eddie's like, "Yeah, Acme squirted on me the other night. I don't know why it suddenly showed up now.
I had to take a cold shower afterwards."
So Roger has to explain that the ink that Acme used was disappearing, reappearing ink, because that's just, boy, that's people with time on their hands.
Yeah. What scientist came up with that one?
Here's the gag: it disappears and then it comes back. It
comes back later after you're out of arm's reach.
You know, and Roger's like, "Oh yeah, Acme, he was a genius." Of course, Baby Herman's like, "Well, if he was a real genius, he would have left his will somewhere where we could find. Now we're just waiting for somebody else to come buy us out." And it's at this moment that Eddie figures out that the paper that Roger had wrote his love letter on had something else written on it. And he hands it to Roger to read, and Roger comes to realize as he's reading it that it's the will of Marvin Acme. And lo and behold, Marvin Acme has left Toontown to all the Toons. Because, you know, Toons have legal rights.
Or not. I mean, right? I don't know how that works exactly. Like, I mean, they were being treated as property, effectively. Like, but also not, because Roger was being paid to be in the movie. But Toon, I don't know. I don't know the legal intricacies of this, but yeah, we talked about that in one of the previous ones, how it's like, do they belong to the land? Are they like serfs? Like, how exactly does this play out? And now that they own themselves, I mean, I guess that's a better scenario.
Right. And so now you have the big heroic moment. Everybody's applauding. Yeah. They're our heroes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Roger's like, hey, Eddie, with all this, does that mean you've got your sense of humor back? And he goes, well, we'll see. And Roger's like, well, put it there. And, you know, shocks him with the electric buzzer.
Yep.
And there's a sudden everybody gasps and goes quiet. And Roger's like, oh, does this mean you've lost your sense of humor already? And he grabs him by the neck and goes, does this answer your question? And gives a big old sloppy kiss. And everybody laughs and cheers some more. Yeah. And then Jessica Rabbit picks him up and goes, come on, Roger, let's go home and I'll bake you a carrot cake.
Like she could bake.
So this is where the ending starts, where everybody starts, all the cartoons start singing, a smile, darn ya, smile. And so they decide, this is, since they're going to their victory, they're gonna walk into the sunset in Toontown. What's fun is the movie makers decided to really play this to the very end, because Valiant and Dolores walk around the brick, the pile of bricks, and Roger and Jessica walk through it, and some of the bricks actually move.
Yeah.
Anyways, everybody starts walking towards the hole to Toontown. Porky Pig is the last police officer, cartoon police officer. All right, folks, keep it moving. Nothing to see here. That's all, folks. And it was like a light bulb moment for him. He goes, hey, that sounds pretty good. That's all, folks. Tinkerbell shows up. And
she does her little wand magic trick and fades right after the Porky Pig ending. So you had to have both endings, right? You had to have the Disney ending and the Warner Brothers ending.
That's right.
You know, theoretically, Valiant is back with Dolores. If you don't know, Dolores is named after the Seven Sorrows of Mary, the Dolores being the Latin name for sorrows, and a very popular name in and amongst Catholic families till about the 70s or 80s. And then it's sort of fallen out since then. You don't see many people being named Dolores anymore. So yeah, we finally got through the movie, folks. It only took us 7 episodes.
Told you I'd get us there.
I think this is on level with Sandlot and Red Dawn. I want to say we did 6 episodes of Sandlot. I think we did 7 of Red Dawn.
Yeah.
And Red Dawn was very similar to this. There's just so much packed in the end of Red Dawn. And we moved very slowly towards the end of that. But you know, that's what we like to do, folks. We provide ultra ridiculously deep dives in these movies,
especially movies that we like. Like you could tell, like, because like what was it, 16 Candles? Jeez, one go.
Yeah, we did one marathon, hour and a half. I never want to touch this ever again. That movie. I mean,
it was not the John Hughes movie we thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I know, right? Like, I figured out John Hughes movie, this will be fine. And it was not. Like, not only was it problematic from so many just general, you know, treating other humans as human beings perspectives, but it wasn't very good either. Like, the plot, the pacing, the dialogue, the story, none of it was good. Like, it was bad in almost every way.
Like, at least, like, say this movie, there were some, you know, if you're a kid watching this, there's some very deeply troubling things in there for a kid that go either traumatize you or go right over your head.
Yeah.
Or expose you to things that you're too young to be exposed to. But, you know, when you're a kid, you just focus on the things that are kid-like.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like very much our generation was the generation of, like, being exposed to things that we were not going to understand. You know, it just seems to be a kind, if you were born in the 80s, early 90s, late 70s, you were going to watch some stuff. Think about the
movie RoboCop. I mean, there were toys made for that movie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even Spaceballs, right? I remember watching Spaceballs as a kid. And then as an adult, and I'm like, my parents let me watch this? Like, what was wrong with them? No wonder I turned out the way I am.
Oh, man. We're like Airplane.
It's Airplane. Oh, my gosh. And it's funny because, you know, when you're a kid, you focus on the things that are funny to you. So it's the Roger, Roger. Victor, Victor.
Just I can remember in junior high, so this is what, late 90s, they actually, I think in eighth grade, started offering Ebonics classes.
Yeah, that was at Palm Bay, right?
So I actually went to junior high. I went to Southwest.
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
Yeah, that was interesting. But I mean, it's done by Robert Zemeckis, and for what it is, maybe his movies aren't Academy Award winning blockbusters. I mean, but they're great movies. I mean, this one, Back to the Future.
Yeah.
To name the two that I can off the top of my head.
So let's get down to it. What are our final thoughts of The Fat Man?
It's a good movie. It's not a great movie, but I mean, it's good. It's entertaining. Something you can watch on a Saturday afternoon. Something you can watch anytime if you're just bored and you don't know what else to put on TV. I can't believe that Bob Hoskins didn't get more work after this. Like he didn't get more notable work after this. I mean, he was in things like Enemy at the Gates, and then there was that Jet Li movie. I can't remember what it was called, but he was in a Jet Li movie where he was the villain. Those are the two that I could think of. And I'm sure if you look up his filmography, you'll see a bunch of things, but nothing that was big enough that you could say, oh, yeah, he was in that. I may not have seen it, but I know he was in that movie.
Yeah.
And I think that's just really kind of a shame because I thought he did a fantastic job for a guy who didn't want to be in this movie.
Part of that may have been due to the problems he had after this movie. He would still imagine characters that weren't there for months after this movie. You know, that could cause problems if you're on a shoot. if you're trying to shoot another movie, right? You've got other work lined up, but you're having some psychosis issues.
Well, you know, though, the funny part there is that maybe there's that short window between the end of this movie and then when we started heavily doing CGI and filming things that aren't actually there, you know?
Yeah.
Because look at all the Star Wars stuff. A lot of it had to be done on sets and props and things like that, that, you know, you had to use your imagination. A lot of sci-fi did after this.
Yeah. And, you know, that was the sort of ultra expansion of the green screen and the blue screen. Mm-hmm. But I really think this is a movie everybody needs to watch at least once.
Sure.
Just for the filmography significance of it, what they were able to pull off with almost entirely practical effects and animation. Mm-hmm. No real computers involved here, right? This is all hand-drawn stuff and practical stuff. And it still holds up, right? We look at a lot of movies that, I mean, even Ghostbusters, you watch the original Ghostbusters and the stop-motion claymation effectively that they did for the dogs, the demon dogs, mm-hmm. doesn't hold up that well.
Yeah, you know, and I didn't point it out before. I think that was probably the worst CGI was when the judge is flattened and he pops up.
Yeah.
That was probably the worst CGI in the whole thing. But I mean,
yeah, it's just done so very well. It has a good story.
I think the genre of it, too, that, you know, 1940s, 1950s murder mystery noir kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a great homage to those film noirs.
It was just so done so well.
Right. It's relatively clean, it's hilarious, and has a lot of not just ridiculous slapstick gags, but plenty of more witty stuff in it too. And you're right, I think any given Saturday, sit down and watch it. I'm honestly a little surprised it did not become more of a cult classic than it is. It's sort of one of those things that people are like, everybody's got to see it, but not, hey, I'm going to sit down and watch this on a regular basis kind of a thing.
Well, because of the things that gave it such a bad rap, which was that it was clearly something Disney came out and proudly said that we made this. And then a lot of adults said, this isn't Disney. This is very risque stuff. How could you put your name on this? You know, again, the whole like they kind of stereotyped Disney in it, you know, and they said, OK, so this is going to be a family movie. This isn't Disney. And I can't believe Disney did this, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's what really did it. And it was there for a long time. So our parents, you know, being the ones that condemned it because, you know, they didn't want their kids to see it. Not saying our specifically, but parents of our parents' generation being that type that suddenly had to censor things. I think that just kind of cemented it and then it never carried on. And I think we missed a window now where you could put that in theaters and parents be okay with it. I think there was maybe in the early 2000s, we could probably get away with that. But I think like today you couldn't.
Yeah.
Now you could release it under nostalgia saying this was, and you would have to specifically say Touchstone. You would have to try to leave Disney's name out of it because Touchstone was the production company.
Right. And that's Disney's more non-mainstream production company, right?
Right.
Like Touchstone owned by Disney, but you put it out under the Touchstone name and people don't assume it's a Disney film. They're more okay with it being a little further afield from the G-rated kind of Disney. And even Disney films today are not G-rated. They're typically PG. You know, there's just been a shift in what parents are okay with their kids seeing and watching. And that's probably because our parents let us watch this kind of stuff. But Who Framed Roger Rabbit has cartoons in it, and it has the Disney cartoons in it. So even though it's under the Touchstone production, everybody knows it's a Disney movie. And so it ended up kind of in that weird spot. But great movie. Obviously, we liked it. We spent, 7 hours talking about a 2-hour movie. So that's probably going to be one of our great works for this year, 2025. We'll start another movie. I'm sure we've got plenty of sports ball to talk about. We've been silent so far.
We're almost halfway through college.
Coming up on game 6 for a lot of schools. So it has not been a quiet sports ball season. It's just been a quiet Pat and the Fat Man in sports ball season. So, but we'll get back to that. And then I really would ask anybody who's listening to consider becoming a patron. The truth of it is everything's getting more expensive. We have opted to pay our editor more, because of that. And because of that, the cost has gone up to make these episodes. So if you laugh, if you listen to us regularly, please consider going to the Patreon and becoming a patron. It's as little as $1 a month. If you pay us $5 a month, that's even better. But for as little as $1 a month, you get access to the Patreon content, which I should be dropping a new episode here shortly. We're covering Andor season 2 now. And over there, it's more short form. We bring on guests and we do whatever our patrons tell us to do. So if they want to hear us talk about a movie, we talk about it. If they want to hear us talk about a TV show, we talk about it. We put the TV shows on the Patreon, but if they want us to talk about a movie, that's the one we talk about because they're paying us. So if you'd like to join that elite crowd of folks, we would sure appreciate it. To get there, patandthefatman.com is the website. Feel free to go there and leave us comments. Gmail, patandthefatman@gmail.com, I want to say is our email address. We're on Facebook, Pat and the Fat Man. We are on Instagram @patandthefatman and then on Twitter @thefatman. 1238. Hit us up, spread us far and wide to anybody, friends and family, and anybody you meet on the street. Yeah, I'm Pat.
I'm the Fat Man.
Stay classy.
That's all, folks. You sicko.
It's not that way. I don't mean it that way. I don't even know how you could take it that way. Why you gotta be like this?
Apparently you can, because you just did it all on your own.
Bruce, go touch some grass.
So anyways, back to this movie where, innocent things happen.
Only innocent things happen with the showgirl and the rabbit. I don't know why they don't have like 47 kids already.
Oh, man, the technicalities. If we were going into cartoon afterlife, cartoon mating, I'm sure is something completely different.
It's like Zootopia with the rabbit city. It's just the population is just rolling like odometer. It's just spinning. We are really good at multiplying.